to the Creative Pen Podcasts. I'm Joanna Penn, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options, internet sales and promotion for your book. The companion website is www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone. I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm interviewing Mariah Jovan. Mariah is the author of romance novels The Proviso and Stay. She also runs a digital publishing business, B10 Media Works, with the Peculiar Pages imprint. So welcome, Mariah.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
No, it's so good to have you on the show, because I've been reading about you pretty much ever since I've got into this sort of online publishing thing, and you've been on Smashwords blog, and your books have been around for a while, haven't they?
Yeah, actually The Proviso has been around for 2 years, and Stay has been around for a year.
Yeah, there we go. So maybe you could start by telling us a bit more about you and how you got into writing and about your books.
I've been writing since I was a child. I had an imaginary friend. I didn't have a pen and a paper, but I had an imaginary friend. And it kind of evolved once I learned how to write. I just kind of started one day putting them all down on all these things that I had in my head down on paper. And I have a degree in creative writing and journalism from the University of Missouri at Kansas City. And it's just, writing's just part of who I am.
And I read a really interesting bit on your blog about why you like romance. I wondered if you would share that with the listeners.
Well, I like, the thing I like about romance is the feeling of that first crush and falling in love and the adrenaline rush and the endorphins and the honeymoon period, and you get to, in a romance novel, you get to do that over and over and over and over again, because it always stops when when life begins. You know, you stop and you get that aww feeling, and you know, and then you go back to real life, which, you know, if you're married or you have a partner, you know, you love them and you have history with them. Most likely that first blush has worn off and it takes a little doing to get back into it, and that's fine. But in a romance novel, you get to do that over and over again without all the real life.
I agree, and you know, that's why I like thrillers. It's escapism, isn't it? It's sort of, it's not real life. That's the whole point.
Well, you know, I've heard stories about people who, you know, are undergoing cancer or undergoing, you know, their children are ill. My son had eye surgery, and, you know, those are the kinds of things that you really don't want to carry after, to know about after the book's over. You know, that's real life. And you want to, in the book it might happen, but, you know, as soon as you close the book, it's done. You know, there's, whatever the outcome was, it's done. You close the book, it's done. You get that little angsty sob thing out, and it's done. But, you know, you have real life, you get sick, you know, you get laid off, you get, your kids get sick, you know, you're struggling with your bills, whatever.
It is.
All these horrible things that you just have to deal with day after day, it drag you down and drag your spirit down. You read a romance novel and you get that little endorphin boost.
So you know? tell us a little bit more about the Proviso, because I started reading it on Smashwords, and it's sort of a legal drama romance, isn't it?
Yes and no. It's a spin on Hamlet. With, it's got three romances in it, so it's, you know, yeah, it's a huge thing, but you get this huge book, you know, three romances for the price of one, really, if you get it electronically. And they have different foci, so, you know, a lot of it's revolving around business and restructuring and basically a legal battle between members of the family. And so basically, it's just Hamlet transplanted to Kansas City and Wall Street, and with a whole bunch of extraneous side stories in between.
No, I was definitely getting into it, and we'll point people at that at the end. So one of the things we wanted to talk about today is about ebooks, because you have this brilliant company, the B10 Media Works, which we'll be talking about as we go through. But I wondered if you could start by sort of explaining what you've seen in the ebook industry over the last couple of years. You know, what changes have you seen, and is it really just the beginning?
The biggest change I've seen that pertains to me are that the tools for creating EPUB files are now pretty sophisticated and free. And that wasn't so when I started. I had to hunt like crazy to find something to convert the Proviso into EPUB. And I had to use, now I can't remember the website. It was a website where you uploaded your stuff and it converted it. And that was fine. It did a good job. But now, you know, I use Sigil. Well, first I started using Atlantis word processor, which you can save to EPUB. And then I went straight to, I went to Sigil, which helps me get into the back end and get under the hood and start tinkering with things as I like to do. So the tools got better, basically. And other extraneous formats fell off by the wayside. Now, one of those things that I noticed kind of fell off to the wayside was the Mobi Pocket. And then the Kindle came along. And it was still languishing a little bit until everybody figured out that if you upload a Mobi Pocket file to Kindle, it really turns out pretty nice, as opposed to if you upload a Word file or something like that, or even a plain HTML file. So I've been noticing that, you know, requests for me to format Kindle files are on the rise. They're no longer referred to by lay people as Mobi Pocket file. They're referred to as a Kindle file. So I just call it that now. You can read it on BlackBerry with the Mobi Pocket Reader, but I just call it a Kindle file, be done with it.
Well, no, that's really interesting that, you know, the Kindle's kind of, you know, coming to the forefront. I guess, you know, what is exciting you about the future of ebooks then? I mean, clearly you've started a business to join in this growth of ebooks, but what do you see coming up in the next couple of years?
You know, I couldn't tell you. I'm not a prognosticator. I'm excited about ebooks because I can carry my library in my hand. I can stand in the grocery store in line and not have a fit because I'm standing there with nothing to do and nothing to read except the tabloids. I got my BlackBerry in my hand and I can just read. Or I'm sitting in the line at the bank or whatever. I am not a visionary. I see what's there. I see a problem. If I have a problem, I find a way to solve it. I can't see future problems to solve. So I don't know. I don't know. I'm just excited about ebooks. I know what certain things, what I would do if I were in certain circumstances, like textbooks or indices or other things, you know, things I have definite opinions about ebooks and what they should be. And what they should not be, which I would not like having an ebook that has embedded video. But I might like having an ebook that has embedded audio. But then you get into licensing issues, so that's kind of a non-starter.
Sorry, carry on.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say that I think it's funny that you say you're not a visionary because you said that the Proviso was around 2 years ago, you know, as an ebook, and you've got a business doing ebooks, and yet most authors, most publishers are way behind where you are. So I think you're, you know, pretty forward thinking.
Oh, well, now I can't take any credit for that. I'm in the being in the romance genre has given me like a 2 or 3 or 4 year leg up on anybody because Elora's Cave and Samhain were there long before I was. They're the leaders here. They're the trailblazers here. I'm not. I modeled what I did on what Selwyn did, who modeled what they did on what Elora's Cave did. Elora's Cave is the visionary. I'm not. But since I'm in the romance genre and the romance community is hopped on this wagon really fast, long, long, long years and years and years ago, I was there because I am in that community that wanted what they wanted and were used to getting it from Elora's Cave and Selwyn. So I said, okay, look, this is what everybody wants, and they've been buying ebooks for long enough that they know what they want. This is what I'm going to do. So I picked and chose what I wanted, details were attractive to me as a consumer, and said, okay, this is what I'm going to do. So I wasn't the visionary here. That's Elora's Cave and Selwyn Publishing, who are, you know, erotica and romance, and they're the ones. That wasn't me.
Well, you know, for the rest
actually,
of us.
Actually, it was my husband, because years and years and years ago, he said, you know, maybe you should just publish your stuff online and have people, you know, have a download and people pay for it. He told me that years ago. Before Elora's Cave existed. And I said, oh, you can't do that. You don't understand how horrible that is. So it was my husband who originally had the idea, who planted it, and then I saw, you know, came across Elora's Cave and Selwyn and went, oh, okay. So no, I'm not a visionary.
Oh well, I think that's brilliant, because the rest of the genres are still pretty much playing catch up, I think. So let's just talk briefly. You also have this great post about the bookstore of the future, which has kind of gone around the writing community. It's been retweeted a lot and people have referred to it. Maybe you could just talk a bit about that and explain what that is.
The bookstore of the future basically is a space-saving device. I have in the town where I live, the suburb of Kansas City where I live, there's a liberal arts college here, and there's this town square, like, you know, your quintessential American town square with courthouse in the middle and all these little shops around it. And one of them was a bookstore, so my husband went to take the proviso and say, hey, you know, can you carry this? And they said, well, actually, no, because we're turning into a coffee shop.
Oh.
And I'm like, wait a minute, it's a bookstore, it's been there for, you know, scads of years. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm losing a bookstore. And then I realized that the closest bookstore to me was like 20 miles away. I live in a major metropolitan area, and the closest bookstore to me is 20 miles? Are you kidding me? So, I got to thinking one day about, you know, what you could do with that space and not have a lot of investment in inventory, because the return system just flummoxed me. And I was just like, how do you do that? You know, how do you have an inventory you don't have to pay for and still go out of business? How do you do that? So, I don't know, it just kind of came to me, and I started drawing and writing, and as I very often do, I post before I think about it, and I say, here's my idea, there it is. And yeah, I got a lot of flack for it too, so.
But a lot of, you know, I thought it was great, and now you have a kind of updated one, don't you, with a espresso book machine downstairs for sort of print on demand.
The first one had the espresso too, because I got to thinking about all the possibilities of what, you know, what that could mean, especially in a college town with, you know, people needing cheap textbooks. I started out my college career at Brigham Young University in Provo, Utah, and there was a Kinko's off campus, and professors would send selected writings or whatever to the Kinko's, and instead of you going to the college bookstore and getting say, you know, 14 different books with one article in them each that you were going to need for the class, they'd compile this big book, send them to Kinko's. They would copy and bind them, and you'd go to Kinko's and get this for your textbook instead of the college bookstore. So I was thinking, you know what, that would really, really work, especially for a liberal arts college.
Mm.
And if it were in the espresso, then you would pay, you know, materials and markup for that book, that title, and, you know, you'd be good to go.
Mm. Mm. And for people who might not know, the Espresso Book Machine prints a book in about 7 minutes, I believe, and it can download from Google Books and a number of other catalogs, can't it? It just, you know, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not widely available yet, but as you said, a lot of universities are starting to pick it up, so I definitely see that in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Okay. Well, look, let's move on because I've got a lot of questions for you.
Okay.
So, So you've got this business, B10 Media Works, and you, as well as publishing your own and other people's books, you've got an imprint there. You also are working on, you know, formatting files for people. So I wanted mm-hmm. to ask you, as an author has got their book, they want to get it out there as an ebook. You know, what do they do in order to do that if they want to do it themselves? First up, and then we'll come on to working with
someone
else.
If they want to format it themselves, or if they want to get it on the market themselves?
If they wanted to format it themselves, is that even recommended?
Well, if they want to format it themselves, they need to learn HTML and CSS, because that is the basis for everything. Everything begins and ends with HTML. And the EPUB file format, they would like to tell you that it's XML or it's XHTML or whatever, but you know, everything starts and ends with HTML. And so that's where you would start, is you just learn that. Now, if you're going to Smashwords to do this, which is what a lot of people opt to do, all you have to really have is a nicely documented or nicely formatted Word document. And when I say nicely formatted, I mean stripped down to the basics. It's not that hard. So it's free of charge at Smashwords. So if they want to format themselves and get under the hood and tinker like I do, then they need to learn HTML and CSS. If they just want to get it, easy, cheap and easy, do it, go to Smashwords.
Mm. No, absolutely, and I'm a big fan of Smashwords as well. So if somebody doesn't actually want to do it themselves, they want to work with somebody like you, what do they come and ask for? Because as you said, there's all these different formats. What are the ones you recommend now? I mean, we mentioned the Kindle, but you know, what about the iPad?
When people come to me and they say they want to do this, what they usually say is they want to EPUB. And most of the time, you've probably seen me tweet about this, most of the time I can tell that they mean they want to publish electronically or electronically publish, meaning EPUB, which is to me a natural evolution of language. You know, it follows email and such. So, but sometimes I can't tell if they mean they want an EPUB file or they want to publish electronically, because they've said something just enough, with just enough knowledge for me to go, okay, which is this? So I'll email them and I'll say, do you mean you want an EPUB file? Well, yes. Okay, and what are you going to do with this file? Because if you know what an EPUB file is and you want one, you know what you're going to do with it. But if they say, yes, I want an EPUB file to put on Smashwords, it means they want to electronically publish and they don't know what an EPUB file is.
Mm.
So there's a lot of confusion, and the people who want to do this are the people who don't read ebooks and don't know anything about it and don't have a device. They just know they want their stuff electronically published, which is perfectly reasonable. When I go take my car to the mechanic, I don't want to know how it works. I know it's broken. I want you to fix it. I don't care what the thermobaba thing is. I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't want to know how it works. I want my car fixed. And so when people come to me and they say, I'm a writer, this is what I want to do, I say, okay, this is how it proceeds. These are your options. This is what you have to choose, what you want to do, and then I can tell you what I can do for you. So I give them the options, and usually, and because Smashwords doesn't have an agreement with Amazon, if they want to be in Kindle, they have to go that route. They have to do it themselves.
Hmm.
And Smashwords, you can get on iPad, you can get on iPhone, you can get in the Barnes & Noble store, you can get into the Sony store and the Kobo store through Smashwords. So really, all you, if you want to do that, if you don't want to mess around with having a publisher account at all these different vendors, and Sony won't even let you have one, what you need is a Smashwords file and a Kindle file.
Which is just HTML. The Kindle file is an HTML file.
No, the Kindle file is the PRC file, so that has to be formatted.
Right.
So it's that you start with say a PDF, and you convert it to a Word document or an RTF. Then you start coding the HTML, and you build your style sheet. Then you run it through a cruncher called Mobi Pocket Creator. And that's how you get your PRC file that you put into Kindle.
Mm.
It's a multi-step process.
Mm. And,
it can get very labor intensive.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm sure everyone listening, and I personally as well, it's better to pay someone to do this, you know, someone like you who's actually doing a business on this, isn't it? Because you must do a lot of these books. You know, it's not just one, you've done a lot.
Right.
Yeah, so that's definitely the way forward. Yeah, no, good. And, I mean, it's interesting, you know, talking to you and, you know, I've talked to Zoe Winters and, you know, April Hamilton and, you know, indie authors. We all got this pretty DIY personality, don't you think?
Me or just generally
general,
people who do this?
General.
Yeah, you know, I think that's spurred by, like, home shows. DIY home shows. People get the idea they can do it themselves because they make it look easy on TV. And sometimes they can't, and sometimes they can. But when they do and they succeed, it's like this big rush. So I blame Bob Vila.
No, that's fantastic. You do have to want to play around a bit to be an indie author, though. I think that's probably the biggest recommendation I always have. It's you just have to get out there and give it a go.
Yeah, and if you don't try, failure comes in two flavors. The failure is not an option flavor, which really motivates me, and the fail early, fail fast flavor, which is try it, you know, if it doesn't work, what did you learn?
Mm.
Regroup, go back, do it again, or drop it. You know, you have to know when to retreat and when to, you know, pick your battles, you know, which hill you want to die on. But, you know, indie authoring is kind of one of those things where you probably should take that as the fail early, fail often flavor.
Mm.
Because if you're staking your whole, you know, retirement on a book that you want to put out, it doesn't matter how good that book is. It doesn't matter how wonderfully written it is or anything if you don't get your audience. And that's where a lot of writers fall down. We're not generally outgoing or gregarious or anything like that. We want to stay in our turrets and write.
Mm.
Leave me alone, I want to write. You can't do that anymore. You just can't, especially an indie author. And so I think what it comes down to is not necessarily the quality of the book. It's your personality, and can you get out there and have people buy your book?
Mm. No, it's absolutely right. And talking of trying things out, you have a great book trailer for The Proviso, which I really like. Some good pictures you know, good music and good story. And, you know, that was obviously effective. But what do you think is the most effective marketing strategy for indie authors, given how much marketing there is out there now?
I think I'm horrible at it. I like Twitter, and that's my platform of choice, if you can call it a platform. I have a growing fan base. It's very slowly growing, especially compared to some other indie authors I know. And they have their own specialized, you know, where they hang out, and that's how, you know, they gather. So I think it's a personality-driven thing. But I have a growing fan base, and a lot of it's from Twitter. And it's because people saw me talk and they thought, oh, she's funny. I would read her book because, you know, if she's this funny or this weird on Twitter, I want to see what she wrote. And I've you know, I can see that there's a definite thing there for me for Twitter, because people get to talking to me and then they go, oh, I gotta see what this chick wrote because she's off the wall. and yeah, I've gotten several fans that way, and all of them are, I don't know about all of them, but very many of them have become friends and even beta readers. So.
No, that is good. And I find Twitter to be the best thing as well. I'm interested then in your sort of, you know, what's your top tip for people using Twitter to do book promotion?
The first thing you know have to know is who to follow, because I first got into Twitter and I was just lost. And actually, I had a friend who was using it fairly effectively, and she said, okay, look, just give me your account information. I'll go in and follow a whole bunch of people for you. So I did that. And she went and she followed a whole bunch of people for me, and she goes, okay, this is what you do. You just watch what they say, and if you don't like what they say or it doesn't apply to you or it doesn't matter to you, unfollow them, but see who they, you know, see who the people you like follow and then follow them. And so I did that, and suddenly I got the hang of Twitter. I got it. I got what it was about when I started having a stream that had all this interesting conversation in it. And I realized it was like a cocktail party. Or like I tweeted a couple days ago, it's like sitting at your cubicle and you're working along and you're talking to your coworkers through your cubicle walls. And that's where I'm comfortable. That kind of a setup is where I'm comfortable, which is one reason why I like Twitter so much. So you have to be, if you get on Twitter, you have to understand that the conversation is ephemeral. It doesn't last but a couple of seconds. You know, unless you have an ongoing conversation with somebody, people just drop out. They come back. And not to take it personally, it's just a cocktail party.
Mm. No, that's great. And yeah, I love Twitter as well. It's definitely my top tip as well. Okay, Mike, well, we're out of time. So where can people find you and your books online?
Well, I would prefer people buy them from b10mediaworks.com because that's my storefront and that's where I get the biggest cut. Otherwise, I'm on Omnilit and in the Kindle store and Smashwords.
And your Twitter handle?
Mariah Jovan.
Fantastic. Well, I'll put all the links in there. Thanks ever so much for your time, Mariah. That was brilliant.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You can get more information on writing, publishing options, sales, and promotion for your book at www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And you can also get your free How to Be an Author workbook at www.howtobeanauthor.com. See you next time!